Good evening, and welcome to the VPR gubernatorial debate. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm joined in VPR's performance studio by Bob Kinzel.
There are three candidates in tonight's debate: Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee, Democrat Sue Minter, and Republican Phil Scott. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi there.
And listeners, we welcome you as well. On social media, please use the hashtag VPRDebates to comment on what you're hearing in this final debate of the governor's race.
Tonight, the candidates will have a chance to question each other directly. But in this first round of the debate, Jane and I will pose questions to the candidates with help from members of the public who've been submitting questions to us in advance.
I should just mention the candidates have agreed to our format, which includes time guidelines. They are going to wrap up their statements when they see their time is running out, and if they don't, we may gently remind them. Bob, go right ahead.
Let's start with the first question, which is really the tone of this campaign. When all is said and done, outside groups will have spent roughly $4 million on TV ads in this race. A lot of the money has been used to attack candidates. Sue Minter, Phil Scott says ads run by Planned Parenthood and the Democratic Governors Association totally distort his record on abortion. He says he's pro-choice, and the ads intentionally try to convince viewers that he's not. Do you stand by these ads? Would you be willing to say at the end of the ad, "I'm Sue Minter, and I approve this message"?
So let's talk about what's been happening in this election, because I think we can say that Citizens United has really come to Vermont. There have been $2.5 million spent to attack me and our campaign. Folks like the Republican Governors Association, whose largest contributors are the oil billionaire Koch brothers, putting words out that are not true. And I think that Vermonters actually want to hear the real issues. And I am proud to have the support of Planned Parenthood. I know that I am a candidate who always has and always will support a woman's right to choose. Let's talk about why this is important. You know, right now there are over 400 bills being introduced in legislatures across this country to restrict a woman's right to choose. I think Vermonters want a governor who will stand strong, not one that is supported by Vermont Right to Life Committee, but actually supported by Planned Parenthood, and I'm proud of that.
Does this mean that you view the thousands of Vermonters who consider themselves to be pro-choice and who support parental notification as embracing the right to life position?
I know that a woman's right to choose is something extremely important to me and women across this country, and absolutely women here in Vermont. Let's just think about what's happening. Right now we have a man running for president who is making jokes about sexually assaulting women. That we have, as I said, over 400 bills introduced restricting a woman's right to choose. That Planned Parenthood is under assault throughout this country. I think now more than ever, Vermonters want a governor who always has, always will, stand strong for a woman's right to choose without restrictions.
Phil Scott, groups supporting you have run ads depicting Sue Minter as a bobblehead, a puppet who essentially will be a clone of outgoing Governor Peter Shumlin. The ads accuse Minter of supporting tax increases that she repeatedly has said she does not support. They also say her agenda will be dangerous for Vermont. Would you have run these ads? Would you be willing to say afterwards, "I'm Phil Scott and I approve this message"?
No, to answer your question directly, no, I wouldn't put my name behind there. I think I like running the ads that we've run. I think that my record speaks for itself. This is my ninth election. I've never run a negative ad in my political career, don't intend to now. And I'd rather just stick to the issues, talk about what we bring to the table. And I'd rather than tearing down my opponent to make myself look better, I'd rather just talk about what I can do. And that's what I've done throughout. So I would rather that they didn't get involved in that way. If they wanted to get involved and have positive messages, which some of them have been, I'd be all for it. But the negative ads, I don't think have a place in Vermont. And believe me, we see it across the nation. And the election on the national level has really taken a turn for the worse and is really polarizing. And if we want to change the dynamics across the country, we need to act appropriately in our own backyards.
Well, can I just say...
Well, we're going to get to your opportunity to speak about this, and you'll actually have an opportunity to ask each other questions, so that would be an appropriate time to do that. Why haven't you spoken out about these ads? Some people might think this is a case where you as a candidate can take the high road, and you let these outside groups take the low road.
Oh, we actually were asked that on one of the WTPTZ or one of the debates, and I said that I would not support them. So I condemn them. So I'm doing it now. I condemn the ads. Anything, the bobblehead ads, I don't think they have any place in Vermont.
Billy, what are your thoughts about the huge amount of money that's pouring into Vermont to influence voters in this race?
Well, it affected my campaign. A guy from Wisconsin gave me $20. And I said, I'm not going to take it. I don't believe in the other cheese state. I believe you influence and force us to dump milk all over the place. I believe we're a small place and we can't compete with the mega farms and Archer Daniel Midland. And I believe that that money has been there. We don't need it. It shouldn't be in our state. You know, the days of Jim Douglas and Madeline Cunin are gone. And I feel very bad about it. I took the $20. And he said, well, don't worry, Bill. I've already sold the check canceled for $40 to a guy from Wisconsin Rapids. And I said, do you realize I won my first professional game in Wisconsin Rapids in 1968? And he said, no. And I said, well, that's a sign. And I said, you know, money, between cortisol, which makes us unhealthy and makes us nervous and makes us a scared nation, I think we're an afraid nation. I think this is a terrible time to be a man. I just am embarrassed. I'm embarrassed.
You're listening to a live gubernatorial debate on VPR. I'm Jane Lindholm with Bob Kinzel, and we're hearing tonight from Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee, who you just heard, Republican Phil Scott, and Democrat Sue Minter. And right now, during this round, we are asking the candidates questions. Many of our questions helped with listener questions that we've been receiving for weeks now from listeners and Vermont residents who want to know more on the issues. So we're going to talk a little bit about energy. Bill Lee, a listener who wrote in anonymously asked, what is your position on commercial wind projects? Please discuss your view on the impact on the landscape.
It's ruinous. The damn red lights that are over there in Lowell. You know, I saw them way before I saw the windmills, and I said, what's coming, you know? All the strippers from Montreal, you know, I said, I'm in Craftsbury, I don't want to see that. Every day, I came to Vermont for one reason, to get away from the madness. I came here and I came up on that ridge. And when you get on that ridge and you descend into Craftsbury, it's the gateway to the kingdom. And you look at the Lowell Mountains that extend on forever. And there was no houses. There was nothing there. I believe in cutting them down. I believe the flicker effect from the windmills causes epilepsy. I believe that it's all that money is going to carbon, you know, for Wisconsin and places that burn coal, especially Ohio and Pennsylvania. And it has no business to be here. I cut them down, turn them into receptacles so we can grow our own biodiesel.
What would be your policy then for energy?
Biodiesel. Grow it on small levels. Horses. Go back to the way we used to log in the old days. Do everything on a smaller scale, the way we did it in Vermont back in the old days. I believe that Vermont is a state of mind. It's a place that shouldn't be tampered with. And if things don't go well in the federal government, I'll be willing to breed us out like Ira and Ethan Allen, and I will go to Quebec. I've got a letter from the mayor of Matsonville, Quebec, welcoming me and saying, Bill, we love you. We think you're the greatest. And I'm going, thank you very much. I did my job for Montreal. I did my job for Boston. And I live in a halfway house in Craftsbury.
Nancy in Windham says, Governor Shumlin says no industrial wind project should go forward in a community that doesn't want it. Sue Minter, will you say the same?
I support the companies that are willing to ask those communities to take a vote and to abide by those. I am a supporter of renewable energy. I think it is absolutely critical to our future. And let's talk about why. You know, climate change isn't just real, it is here. Let's think about the winter that didn't happen last year. What happened to our ski areas? What happened up in the Northeast Kingdom when the snow machines didn't come to the general stores? we have to take this on, and I am going to be a governor that really wants to meet this challenge. We need to also realize that it's an economic opportunity. The renewable energy and efficiency economy is actually one of the fastest growing sectors of our economy. 17,000 jobs, good paying jobs that young people are actually coming to Vermont to have. So we can actually move the dial, address climate change, grow our economy, bring young people here, and change the future. That's the leader I want to be.
But specific to wind projects, are you in favor of large-scale wind projects? Would you put them on ridgelines? Would you put a halt to ridgeline wind development?
Yes, I'm supportive of renewable energy, and I do believe well-sited wind is part of that long-term solution, which isn't to say that others have suggested that every single mountain has to have wind on top of it. We are looking at community-scale wind. We are looking at how we use many types of renewable energy. We know we need to increase solar. We know we can do more hydro, micro-hydro. We can look at technology. That's my energy plan, is actually to focus on reducing peak demand of electricity. That's when we buy the dirtiest and the most expensive electricity. When we reduce by 10% over 5 years, we're going to save Vermonters' costs on their energy. We are going to use technology and innovation to move towards energy independence and locally distributed energy. That is the future. We have to address these serious challenges, because if we don't, our planet is at risk. Our children are at risk. This is very serious, and that's why I'm focused on it.
Phil Scott, what is the right balance of letting communities have a say in energy siting projects, and how would you work towards the state goal of 90% renewables by 2050, which you say you support, while also crafting that balance between communities having the right to say yes or no to projects?
Well, sure. As you probably know, I'm not a supporter of ridgeline development. I believe that it's tearing Vermont apart, tearing the fabric of Vermont apart, pitting neighbor against neighbor, and causing a lot of controversy for no good reason. In one sense, there are other alternatives. I think solar is one that's advancing at a rapid rate. Proper siting of solar is important as well. I think hydro is important. Biomass. There's other options available to us. So I believe that that municipalities and those in those communities should have some say in what happens in their communities. Do I believe that there should be veto power over that? No, I don't believe that. I think that should be left to the Public Service Board. But I think that there should be a proper forum for that, and more input by the local communities, as was in the bill that Governor Shumlin had vetoed. I thought that was unnecessary to veto.
So you like the idea that communities, if they come up with an energy plan for themselves, would be able to have a little bit more power in saying what kinds of projects are sited within their boundaries than if they don't have a suitable energy portfolio and energy plan for the future?
I believe that they should have more say in what happens in their communities. And you take Irisburg, for instance. They had a vote, a non-binding vote. It was lopsided, 200 and something to 30 something, and they didn't want the wind development in their community. But they did want to do something about renewables, so they went and asked the Public Service Department about possibly siting some solar, because they believe in it. They want to do their part. They were told that there wasn't a need because they didn't have the power demand, and it just didn't make any sense. They had enough power demand for ridgeline development, but not enough for solar. I mean, there needs to be more input, and everyone needs to be on board.
Let's take a look at social programs and how to pay for them. Sue Minter, Annie in Brattleboro wrote us, how would you as governor ensure access to high-quality, affordable child care for all children in Vermont under the age of 5? And she also cited your support for a paid family leave. But Ken in Stowe wants to know, how will you make sure that the burden of funding social programs doesn't fall on small businesses through additional taxes? How do you balance these concerns?
Well, you know, I have looked at a lot of different challenges. I mean, let's face it, the challenges that Vermonters are facing to afford child care, to make sure they can afford college. These are huge issues, not just for people, but for our economy. You know, right now in Vermont, over 40% of our kids are coming to kindergarten unready to learn. What does that bode for our future? And at the other end of the spectrum, we have now 4 out of 10 Vermont high school graduates not continuing beyond. And that's why I have proposed a program for 2 years tuition-free community college or technical college. And I do present a proposal for paying for it through a franchise fee on the largest out-of-state banks, because I know that if we don't address these problems, we won't be able to grow the economy. Education equals workforce equals economic growth. And that is why it is critical that we invest in those futures.
Wouldn't your plan for paid family leave be an additional mandate for businesses? At a previous debate, you said, quote, "We would have a pool where individuals and businesses would pay in, and that would enable businesses to offer paid family and maternity leave."
Well, let's talk about why we need paid family leave. You know, I had the ability when I had my first child. I did not have any guarantee of family leave. I was pregnant and afraid to tell my employer. When I had my second child, I had a commitment from my employer, the state of Vermont, as a member of the union, that I would have a guaranteed leave. I know how critically important it is. It shouldn't be a case of luck whether someone has to choose between their job and their family. Our program is actually just being initiated. We just had a report of a Blue Ribbon Commission to talk about this. The idea is to create a pool through a deduction on a paycheck that would go towards family leave. This isn't going to add a new burden or cost to businesses. It's actually helping people's pay go into a pool so that they will have the security of paid family leave.
Would businesses have some responsibility as well?
Not under the plan as we've been learning about it. And again, these are new ideas. The report that came out discussion that you recited looks really not at looking towards the employer, but in fact asking the employee to have that opportunity to be part of a pool. You know, when we are all in, we can all win. We have to be looking at different ways of solving these problems. Because, you know, it's very important to have women in the workforce. Right now, women in Vermont who work full-time, 43% of women working full-time still can't meet their basic needs. Women are choosing to pull out of the workforce to give childcare. They shouldn't have to make that choice between their job and their family. It isn't just women. It's everyone. When you have guaranteed family leave, as I did, I was able to be with my father when he was dying in hospice. That's because I knew I could take that time and have a job to go back to. Everyone should have that right.
Phil Scott, how do you propose to address the issue of affordable child care in Vermont for many young families? This is a huge burden, in many cases more than $10,000 a year per child. If you want to bring more young people into Vermont's workforce, do you also need to expand affordable child care throughout the state?
Well, you bring up an important subject. Obviously, we have to do better in that regard. Because we do have a declining workforce. There's less people working now than there was 7 years ago. And we have this demographic problem where we're trying to, there's 30,000 less people in this age group from 25 to 45 since the last census. And so we need more families in Vermont. And I think that's part of the answer. We have ways of paying for that as well, or assisting in that. And I believe there's a PICUS report that was done with the education. That was done by the Joint Fiscal Office, and it was advocated by the legislature to take a look at how we could save some money and where we could find some efficiencies in our education system, because we're spending $1.6 billion to educate 86,000 kids. So I would say there's $150 million worth of savings, and the legislature didn't act on that. And I would say that if there's $150 million worth of savings, maybe we could take a portion of that. Maybe we could take a third of that and put it towards early childhood education, put that towards child care, and maybe the rest of it we could use for either rebates to taxpayers, reducing their tax burden, property tax burden, or possibly more in terms of higher ed and tech ed and so forth. So I think we need to implement some of the plans and reports that have been asked for by the legislature in order to save some money and reinvest in those areas.
Sue Minter says it's really important to have paid family leave. Do you agree?
Not if it's going to be a burden on businesses. If it's voluntary, as Sue had just said, I had understood before that it was a shared responsibility between the business and the employee. If it's strictly on the employee, I think it's a great concept. If it's voluntary in nature and you don't have to be forced to be in the pool, I think it's great. It's a great incentive. I believe businesses would want to do it themselves. I don't know why the government wouldn't have to get involved at that point.
Bill Lee, do you think it's critical to expand affordable child care programs in Vermont?
Yes, most definitely. And the funny thing is we do it well in Craftsbury. We have a lot of people that are retired. They come up, they give their time at the library. We have mentoring systems. We take care of ourselves. I believe that that is the future of Vermont, is that we're going to do it ourselves, because we're going to have an elderly population that's very knowledgeable. They come here to get away from all the burdens of what I call a post-industrial society. So they're going to donate their time. I see nothing but good things happening in this state. And these problems that we're talking about right now will not occur in the future. These are all symptoms of a post-industrial society, whether it be ridgeline wind or everything. We're going to start using less. We're going to start doing more by ourselves. Craftsbury, with Pete Johnson and all the people, all the little babies are all together. They're all at the library. They're having shows three, four times a week. Everything is starting to come together. The problem is, in the urban environment that we've created in our society, It's terrible out there, and that's why I live in the country. And you know, most people don't have the ability to do what I do, you know. And I see the future is going to be good, and I think we're worrying about the wrong thing. We just got to make everything smaller, better, and we start thinking about our future of Vermont. We may have to leave this just the way that Thomas Naylor said back in the Second Vermont Republic, and Rob Woodward and all the people I've been reading lately are screaming that we got to go small, not big.
This is the gubernatorial debate on VPR. You're listening to a live debate with Republican Phil Scott, Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee, and Democrat Sue Minter. I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm here with Bob Kinzel. And let's move on to education funding right now. Vermonters frequently complain about their tax burden, and central among this is the property tax, which is seen as too high and way too complicated because of the way Vermont's public schools are funded. Because of the income sensitivity program, right now about two-thirds of homeowners in Vermont pay their municipal school tax based on their income rather than on their home value. There have been a lot of ideas for how to change or simplify that formula or to adjust the balance of who's paying what. What changes would you make to the formula or to the mix of tax sources to pay for education? Bill Lee?
Wow. You know, it's I'm a Eugene Debs guy. I'm a union guy. I believe in just raise the minimum tax, amount of money that you make, and it'll trickle down. From the poor people in this country do not have the opportunity to work. They do not have the opportunity. The people here in Vermont don't even want to work on farms. We're bringing in mostly outside labor, Mexican labor that comes up here. And I just think that, you know, our education system is fraught with a lot of top-heavy. We just don't educate the way we used to. Everybody's on a digital device. I've never owned one. I believe that we've sold our soul to the devil by having these amulets in our hand and these things that think they're going to change us. What they're doing is dictating our lives. We're not using what's between our ears, which is our brain, and I believe that's our biggest problem.
But nonetheless, how would you pay for education?
How do you pay for it? You're not going to need to pay for it. It's got to be that money is being spent. We just got to redistribute it back to a smaller Waldorf-style school, our Montessori-style school, our in-house training schools, and everything. I believe that brick-and-mortar buildings of schools are obsolete. I believe with the technology that we have and we're just going to be educating totally different on a smaller scale and a more rural, urban, less environment. The urban places, that's, I feel bad for people that live in cities. That's why I don't live in one.
Phil Scott, what do you think about the right mix for the education funding formula that gets it right for Vermont?
Well, I've heard there's been a lot of talk about changing the formula, and that's I'm open-minded to changing the formula. But at the same time, we have to address the spending, because if we just change the formula, we're just rearranging the deck chairs. Somebody's going to pay somewhere, and we still pay a lot of money. And when you look back at the problem, as I said before, we spend $1.6 billion to educate 86,000 kids. And that's 20,000 more, 20,000 less than we were 20 years ago. So that there lies the problem. It's our demographics. It's our aging population. It just puts more pressure on the education system itself. We have to look at ways. Act 46 was a way to address some of that. And it's, while not a perfect law, it was a step at least in the right direction in terms of having the dialogue about the spending problems that we have. We're going to have to deliver a 21st century education in a much different way. And I believe it's opening up more school choice. I think we have to protect our independent schools. I think they're essential. In terms of our economy, I believe that protecting that and providing a quality education in a much different way will attract more people into the state.
So for you, it's not so much changing the way education is paid for or how we charge people, but it's actually changing how people are attracted to schools through school choice and through Act 46 district mergers?
Some school consolidation, some more latitude within Act 46 in terms of there's some schools, small schools are doing a terrific job. It doesn't mean that everyone has to consolidate, but making sure the per pupil spending is under within the realm of possibilities. I mean, there's the problem, $1.6 billion, 86,000 kids, and it's not, we're not getting the outcome that we should.
So what? Fire teachers, aides? I mean, do we need to
I think
cut that ratio?
Look at the mandates. Look at the Pikers report. Look at the mandates that we impose on some of the school systems. I've been at Burr and Burton. They provide a great education, and they do it in a much different way. Look at Linden Institute, same way. I was at Maple Street School down in Manchester the other day, their K-8 program. It's just a different way of looking at things. And there's still... There's room for everyone, but we need to grow the economy in order to bring more people in order to have a great quality education. People are attracted to Vermont because of the independent schools as well. So that's part of the answer.
So, Minter, what do you think about the right formula for how to pay for public education in Vermont?
Well, let's just start by recognizing that I really believe that education is the most important thing we do for our future. Our kids are our future. And I, as governor, will do everything I can to support our strong public schools as well as our independent schools, our public-private schools. I have been, as a mom of two kids who have gone through our public school, I volunteered in the classroom, I've been part of the community coaching. I have a real sense that we must address really what are the cost drivers. In terms of the formula, I agree with the principle of helping us to use the ability to pay, but I want us to
income sensitivity.
The income sensitivity and looking at people's ability to pay, I think that's important. But I also think we have to look at the cost drivers. It is about the declining enrollment and the cost per pupil of some of our very, very small schools. It is about health care. It's actually the rising cost of health care that is driving so many of the challenges for our families, our businesses, and our schools that's driving property taxes. 70 to 80% of the cost of a school is the employee.
And so again, would you then lower or increase the ratio, I guess, so that we have fewer staff members in schools? Would that be the tact that you would take?
Well, what I have seen with some of the schools, and our district is one of those who have been able to unify the governance structure for our particular district. We've gone from having 7 different school boards and 7 different budgets for 1,800 students to having 1 governance structure. It wasn't an easy conversation, but what I know is we are going to have cost effectiveness and I think better quality opportunities for students. Now, that I think has been an an opportunity under Act 46 for some of our more densely populated areas. But I have proposed an extension, a one-year extension on the district unification process, because in our more rural communities, and I have been in schools around this state, also Burton, I've been to the many schools, but we are seeing in small communities, certainly one size does not fit all, and we need much greater flexibility and more time because the pressure is too great for such an extraordinary challenge and change for our schools.
Let's talk about health care. Phil Scott, you've been very critical of the operations of the state's health care exchange, Vermont Health Connect, but rates for the policies on the exchange are rising much slower than in many, many other states. The national average increase is close to 25%. In Vermont, the rate increase is 5%. Isn't this evidence that it would be a big mistake to terminate Vermont Health Connect and join the national exchange?
Well, absolutely not. You know, the rates have nothing to do with the functioning exchange or the dysfunctioning exchange. The exchange itself is just a website. It's a portal to enable you to get through to choose the type of plans you want. It has nothing to do with the rates. So this has been non-functioning for a number of years. It isn't fixing itself. And it seems as though we've spent $200 million to try and build this exchange, this custom-made IT structure that is not like anything else in the country. And it's when you look at the maintenance costs of that exchange over the next few years, it's double what any other state is paying. So what we need to do is have a functioning exchange so that you can go to the website and you can obtain the insurance that you choose for you. But it has nothing to do with the cost of health care.
Many Vermonters on the exchange are eligible for subsidies. How specifically would you maintain this financial assistance if you shift over to the federal model?
Well, they'll still get federal subsidies from that, but it's the state subsidies that people are talking about. We did it with Catamount. It's easy to do. I mean, we can devise a system in order to help those who need our help, subsidize those in the same way that's being done now. But it's just going to take a different approach. And again, we did it with Catamount, so we can do it with this.
Sue Minter, many Vermonters say they've lost confidence in the state government's ability to deal with health care because of all those problems on the exchange. Now, you're looking at proposals to expand the state's role in health care, perhaps extend the age eligibility of Dr. Dinosaur, perhaps have the state provide primary care to all Vermonters. How can you proceed with these plans when so many Vermonters don't trust the government's ability to do these things?
Well, I think it's really important that the next governor take on the challenge of Vermont Health Connect. But I think it's really important that we have a governor who actually understands how to manage very complicated IT programs. It concerns me greatly when I hear Phil say that it will be easy to put together two parallel programs. We know that by jumping to the federal exchange right now, it would potentially kick off 17,000 people who wouldn't be subsidized, and it would cost $24 million. So I want to have fresh eyes on this program. I want to make sure whatever we do isn't going to cost taxpayers more and isn't going to leave people without subsidies. And it is very important that we have someone who's actually managed major projects like that, because there is nothing simple about making another system, and it isn't like Catamount Health. This is a completely new world that we are in with the federal federal exchange. And, you know, I was at the Blue Cross Blue Shield offices meeting employees just the other day, talking to the folks who actually are working with the exchange, talking about the improvement of the exchange, but most importantly, talking to people in Florida who actually want to get off of the Florida exchange, come to the Vermont exchange, because of the costs and because of the ability to use the Blue Cross plan. I think what we must continue to do is ensure that the system works, because as you say, Vermonters have lost faith. It has absolutely failed many, many Vermonters. I heard stories in Addison County of a woman who was kicked off the exchange after her husband died, and it's a terrible problem, and I will be taking it on.
Bill Lee, would you maintain Vermont Health Connect, or drop it and join the federal exchange.
You spent $200 million. You know, you're going to have to just fix it. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I guess I can't be governor if I got to be an IT guy because I don't own a phone. And as Bill Clinton said, Beck, what is it? You know, and I ran against Bill Clinton in 88 on the Rhino Party ticket. And if you had elected me back in president in 88, we wouldn't have all these problems right now. So basically, I'm your solution. I'm the only one that is not taking money. I'm the only one that has the right ideas. I'm the only one that knows that you have to run children in preschool. You have to get a healthier environment. You have to tax the bad stuff in our environment. You have sin tax on all the white flour, all the bad food that kids are eating, and get them healthy, and then we won't have to worry about our health care system because we'll be Spartans.
More to come here. This is VPR's gubernatorial debate. You're hearing from Phil Scott, Sue Minter, and Bill Lee. Stay with us. As we come back, the candidates will ask one another questions. You're listening to VPR.
This is the governor's debate on VPR. I'm Bob Kinzel with Jane Lindholm. We're hearing tonight from Democrat Sue Minter, Republican Phil Scott, and Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee. And listeners, as you comment on the debate on social media, use the hashtag VPRDebates.
In this section of the evening, the candidates will post questions directly to one another. Just a gentle reminder here, your questions should be questions, not speeches. We want to hear what you want the other candidate to say or to answer, and you will have a chance for a follow-up. Phil Scott, you get to ask the first question. Who is it to?
It'll be to Sue. We all know the next budget left by the current administration is going to be challenging at best. Revenues are down. We have a lot of issues. I think if we look into this this budget that's being proposed, it's a bit of a house of cards. I've said that I won't support a budget that grows faster than the economy or wages. You've laid out a lot of new spending proposals. What taxes will you raise in order to fulfill all the promises you've made thus far?
So I will start off by saying, as I have for the last 6 years, balancing a $600 million budget, being fiscally responsible, I will always present a balanced budget as governor. I know that we have many challenges. Every single proposal that I have put forth, I have put forward a revenue source. But you know, what's really interesting to me, Phil, is that you've been talking about how you're going to balance the budget by looking at a $55 million savings by saving a penny on every dollar. It's called the Penny Plan. It happens to be from Donald Trump's website. Now, the Penny Plan is a slogan. It's actually not a governance strategy. I've actually been managing a workforce of 1,300 people, a $600 million budget through very challenging fiscal times. I understand what happens when you have to plan scenarios, when you have to hold back some spending and advance others. I know that issues come up that we will never anticipate, and that I know that I'm a governor who will be able to manage because I've been doing this for the last 6 years and 6 years before that in the legislature on the Appropriations Committee. That's what I think we need as governor.
Phil Scott, follow up.
So, Sue, you didn't really answer the question, but are you saying that you will hold the line on spending? Will you not raise taxes, or are you proposing new taxes?
So, Phil, I'll tell you again, which I've told you again and again, and I know you say you've been running a positive campaign, but let's get real. You have been actually making negative attacks. You've been telling people again and again that I plan to raise taxes. I have said, and I will say, yes, so I am going to do that,
Phil. I'm just asking
you
which, if you're going to hold the line on taxes.
So, Phil, I'm going to say again, yeah, I have said that I am going to hold the line. I am going to
not
increase the rates on income or sales tax. I'm not going to increase new sales and service taxes that are going to hurt the middle class. What I am going to look to do is reduce exemptions that actually support the wealthy. Things like exemptions on limo rides, lobbyists, jet owners. And Phil, I have an economic plan that's really about creating jobs and opportunity. It's not really based on your plan, which is, I think, trickle-down economics. We've learned from the National Republican playbook that doesn't work. I know your plan is about tax breaks, but actually what I'm trying to do is create the opportunity for new entrepreneurs, livable wage jobs, great communities, education so that we have the workforce and the jobs for the future.
We're going to have more time to get into this. Sue Minter, your first question. Who's it for?
It's also for Phil. Phil, abused women are 5 times more likely to be killed by their abuser if their abuser owns a gun. Domestic abusers cannot buy guns from federal licensed firearm dealers. But in Vermont, these same domestic abusers can freely buy guns from private sales because there are no background checks. And we know that in states where there are background checks on all handguns, 46% fewer women are shot to death by their intimate partners. Why won't you join me in closing the private sale loophole, protect our families and women, and call for background checks on all guns?
Well, so you know, I've advocated for no changes in the gun laws. We're one of the safest states in the nation. We don't have a problem here in Vermont, and I think it's a problem in search of a solution that doesn't exist. I believe what we should do is be searching for the root of the problem, which is the violence. It's not about the gun. It's the violence. And as we've seen across the world and across the nation, people will seek any opportunity to inflict harm on others if they have the mindset to do so. And they'll do it with knives. They'll do it with cars. They'll do it with airplanes. They'll do it with crock pots and improvised explosives. They'll do it with anything they have at their disposal. It isn't the gun. It's the violence. And that's what we should be doing, is solving the problems, that whether it's opiate abuse, mental health issues, it's not the gun, it's the violence we need to correct.
But we do have a problem, Phil. We do. We have the 8th highest rate of domestic violence in the country in 2013. The majority of our homicides are domestic violence related, and most of them are with firearms. And in states where we have background checks, we have a significant reduction in the percentage of women being killed by their domestic abusers. We also have a significant reduction in suicides with gun, and we have a significant reduction in police being shot by firearms that are not their own. This is a way we can actually reduce the violence, Phil. And let's remember this. In Vermont, over 80% of Vermonters support background checks on all guns, and many of them law-abiding gun owners.
I understand, Sue, because you govern by polling. You've run your campaign by polling. You take that approach, and I haven't done so. I talk with Vermonters every single day, and I still believe that we are one of the safest states in the nation. I don't believe we have a problem with guns, and I'm going to stick by my notion that we should enforce the laws that are on the books and not introduce any new gun laws.
Billy, do you have a question for one of the candidates?
Yeah, I want to know, ask Sue, how Jasper's doing, and has he forgiven the driver?
Sue, you might need to explain. Jasper's your son.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. That's
a
nice
Jasper
question to thank me, and that's why I am wearing this bracelet. Actually, I had a plan to give it to you. It's called Harwood Strong. That's from Jasper.
I hit my last home run in Harwood. I beat a kid with a Yankee hat on it. It's all the incentive I needed. And, Jasper was involved. All of his friends were killed in that car crash that happened. And the reason I asked the question is because the guy sought help. He sought help 3 times. It's almost like Jesus. He was just denied 3 times. And on the 3rd time, he left and he ran down the wrong side of the road. This is what's wrong with our health care system. This is what's wrong with communication in our state. Phil, it's not fear, it's not gun violence, it's nothing else. We are creating a race of people that are fearful and building gates. And I blame it on the Republican Party. I blame it right to the top because they want to live in gated communities.
Let me pose this to Sumitra, since you posed your question to her. And just to recap for people, I think most Vermonters are aware of this situation, but five teenagers were killed in a collision with a man who was driving the wrong way the highway.
Worst thing that's happened in my since I've been here in 88.
It is a terrible tragedy, and there have been questions raised about what kind of help the driver in this case may have been seeking. Still a lot to find out about that, but Sumitra, the question was posed to you on Jasper and how he's feeling, but you may want to address that further.
Well, I want to say a few things. First, thanks for the question, and I will say after last night's World Series, Jasper is feeling sleepy right now. But it's been very, very serious issue in our community. Obviously, these five kids were Jasper's classmates. Two of them his very, very close friends, one of whom was like a son to me. I coached him soccer. My husband coached him baseball. And what I know is that our community has demonstrated through this tragedy once again why I love this state, why I want to continue to be a leader in this state. It's like I felt after Irene that people have come together in beautiful ways. In 48 hours after the tragedy, our soccer field was filled with over 1,000 people holding candles, sharing their love, sharing their ability to help and help move forward beyond tragedy. You asked if he had, anger. I don't feel that from him or really anyone. What I feel right now is a community coming together, there for one another, which is how we do it in Vermont, which is what is so special in Vermont, that we actually care so much about one another. And that's what's coming from Harwood Strong. I was at the Brattleboro Union High School the other day talking with students and saw that they had done a lot to help us, and all the school population is standing strong for Harwood.
The reason I said this is the family of the guy that was involved in the 9/11 attack, those two families got together, and there's a great documentary on how they came together and they speak out against the violence on this planet. And this is what Vermont is strong about. And I can't think of the Masawi, I think the guy was, and they forgave each other. And I think that that's what we have to do. And that's why I still believe if this polarization at our global, it's just going to get worse, and we got to forgive.
You're listening to a live debate with the three candidates for governor, Bill Lee, Sumitra, and Phil Scott. Later in the debate, the candidates will answer more questions from the public, but right now they're questioning each other directly. Phil Scott, who gets your second question?
I'll pose it to Sue again. A number of years ago when I was in the Senate, and I'm not sure if you were in the House at that point, but I was part of an initiative to create a tax incentive to remove the sales tax on aircraft parts. And that was passed and has been implemented and been very successful for Vermont in a number of different ways. It's created a tech program at Essex Tech School. And also has really helped out in terms of economic development for the state. But there's a sunset on that sales tax for aircraft parts this year that's coming up. Will you be working towards trying to continue with that sunset, or what would you propose in that regard?
So, as I have said, I will be holding the line on sales and income tax rates. I will be looking for opportunities to actually remove exemptions for, I think, programs that support the wealthy and aren't really focused on helping to reduce the burden on the middle class. So just like any proposal, I will evaluate it through that lens. What are we doing to make Vermont more affordable for middle class Vermonters? That's why I am focused on helping to increase the minimum wage. It's why I'm focused on creating more livable wage jobs, making college more affordable so that kids have the opportunity to actually get trained and qualified for livable wage jobs so that we can help break the generational cycle of poverty that is crushing our state and our country. And that if we don't focus on making sure we rebuild the middle class, if we don't make sure we have more affordable quality childcare, with 40% of our kids coming to kindergarten. If we don't get more kids beyond high school, what does that look like? We need to make sure we are investing in our future, because when we do, that's how we grow the economy.
I just want to get back to the question. The sunset, are you proposing that we eliminate or just let it sunset? This has been really, really advantageous for Vermont Technical College. It's created an avionics program with that. It's been great for the economy. Is it something that you would continue with?
So I will look at it, as I will with any proposal, how it affects the middle class. So I will have to have information to understand the impacts, because everything we do has impacts, positive and negative. And we need to be thinking about how our investments today are affecting our future. We have to look at the consequences of all of these decisions. And when I hear ideas of trying to save a penny on every dollar, finding how we make $55 million of savings, I don't think it's real governance. You know, I have been focusing in my work as Secretary of Transportation on innovation and efficiency. We've actually created a program called the Accelerated Bridge Program, where we've gone from having a bridge for 8 years instead of 8 years, we've gone down to 2 years. Yeah. I'm glad your company has been able to benefit
investments. That's not my company. When I was in the Senate, I was the vice chair of the committee, and we actually proposed some of those innovative ideas that you claim credit for. So
I'm glad you came
on board with that.
I'm glad that, to have had the motivation by having innovation awards, by moving forward the entire structural
as a result of some of our good work in the legislature.
Sue Minter, let's get a second question from you.
Well, let's ask Bill a question. Listen, we've talked about the Cubs before.
Yes.
Now that Theo Epstein has ended the Red Sox World Series drought of 86 years and the Cubs drought of 108 years. Bill, is it fair to call Theo the God of baseball?
I don't believe in God. I'm an agnostic, dyslexic agnostic. I contemplate the existence of dogs. I believe that Theo has done a remarkable job. Where does he go from here? You know, I would retire. The thing that was best is he was holding his son at the end of the game. And the fact that he had him, his wife was there, and he just showed genuine love. And, when Lester came in, I thought they were going to lose, because I know Lester can't throw to first. He can't field his position. It's remarkable how that game evolved. I said it was going to be 7-6. On my show in Montreal, and Mitch and I said I did not know who was going to win. And Orlando Chapman is from Holguin, Cuba, and I take kids from Vermont, and I take kids from all over the United States and Canada to Cuba in the winter, and we exchange. And I believe that it was a great fitting end, and I feel bad for Terry Francona, though.
Bill Lee, who gets your second question?
Oh, wow. Actually, I don't have a second question because I know everything.
I think that's the first time we've heard that in a gubernatorial debate.
He's yielding his time.
That kind of modesty is not something we hear very often. All right, well, we'll move on. Phil Scott, you get another question. Who are you going to ask?
I'll ask it to Sue once again. So, Sue, after much polling, you've come to the conclusion that supporting a carbon tax for Vermont only isn't a great campaign strategy. So you backtracked a bit and now say you will support or consider a regional carbon tax. How many states constitute a region for you in your plan?
Well, here you are again, Phil, saying things that I think are not accurate. Number one, I've always said I am against a carbon tax. I have said it before, and I'm saying it again. I will oppose a carbon tax. My administration will not support a carbon tax. But we do need to look regionally. There are 9 states, Phil, that constitute the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a program that was started under Governor Douglas. And it is not a tax, Phil. It is an incentive program. It's actually brought over $11 million into Vermont by staying under a cap. And that's how we've been filling the renewable energy fund. That's how we've been investing in efficiency and renewable energy. And when we continue to expand on that program and include transportation fuels, we'll have the ability to actually have greater investment in Vermont to have more incentives to reduce to reduce carbon emissions, not just in the electric sector, but in the transportation sector, which is 46% of our carbon footprint.
So you'll veto a carbon tax if it comes across your desk?
As I have said, Phil, I am not supporting a carbon tax. That is my commitment to oppose a carbon tax. Can we just talk for a moment about why this is important, why we're having this conversation? Because, as I have said, climate change is real. It is here. It is affecting our economy. And, you know, it isn't a joke to be talking about what is happening in this country. I was on President Obama's task force on climate preparedness and resilience. I had the opportunity to work with leaders across this country dealing with the effects of climate. We have serious crises ahead. We've got a drought in California. We've got landslides and forest fires and flooding in Colorado. I was lucky enough to be asked to help lead a group to Colorado after their flooding in 2013. This was an overwhelming disaster, much like Irene. If we don't take on this challenge, if we don't take this seriously, if we just say no, what are we doing for the future? That's my concern.
So it's a simple yes or no.
About climate change? No, about the carbon tax.
As Aristotle said, luck is when the arrow hits the state next to you. And the fact that this is all occurring, we have created this problem on this planet, and they call it a fossil fuel because they're not making any more of it. You got to go to the sun. The sun is our only source of energy. It created all the oil. It created all the coal. It created everything, the uranium that came out of the ground. And we got to find ways. What I believe is the fact that these are symptoms of a problem. And the problem is we've got to do away with borders. I'm a sans frontier guy. I want to dissolve the border between Quebec and Vermont. I want free trade back and forth. I believe they're our number one trading partner, and that will help us tremendously that these damn logging trucks with Quebec plates aren't stealing our logs from Vermont and taking them north.
All right, I want to give Tsumintra a chance. You get another question. Who are you going to pose it to?
I'm going to pose it to Phil. So, Phil, here's the thing. You're against affordable college. You're against paid family leave. You're against raising the minimum wage. You're against addressing climate change by growing our green energy economy. You're against background checks to keep our communities safe. And you do not support a woman's right to choose without restrictions. You say you're running a positive campaign, and now you are running a dishonest attacks against me. You know, the more I'm hearing, the more I feel like you're sounding like National Republican Party members. And here's the question. Why, in this pivotal time in our country, are you standing with the National Republican Party platforms and not with Vermont working families?
Well, I think that's just ridiculous, Sue. I think you know that as well. That's a great soundbite, and I applaud you for that. But as Vermonters know, they know me. I grew up in Barrie, a blue-collar community. I've been here all my life, had a business here for 30-something years. I've served in the legislature for 10 of those years. I've six years as lieutenant governor. I think Vermonters know me. I've been independent. I've bucked the party many times. In terms of I supported Planned Parenthood when they were under attack by the National Republicans about defunding, I supported them. I defended them. I said that I went and actually toured the facility here in Burlington. And I said, you know, they do great work for women's health, and I believe in what their mission is, and they're part of our social fabric and much needed in Vermont. So I said we shouldn't defund Planned Parenthood. We should continue to move in that direction. So I'm an independent sort, and I think Vermonters know that, and it's about faith and trust. And I think they know me, and I think they have faith in me, and I think they trust me.
A follow-up, Sue?
Well, I do think that when we are talking about affordability, The proposals that I have are going to make Vermont more affordable to middle-class Vermonters, raising the minimum wage, making college affordable. You know, when I've been traveling, whether it's Amanda in Bennington, who pays $800 a month for her student loan repayment. These are huge challenges. She has to pay more than her rent. We've got to address this because
So what's your question for Phil on that?
My question is, Phil, you have said that you were going to have an education plan. Now, it's 5 days or so around from the election. We are wondering, is this a plan that is a secret? Are you going to present your education plan before the election?
Gosh, I don't remember promising an education plan. But
it's in your report, your 40-page economic development plan.
Oh, I'm glad you read it because I think you've utilized a lot of the things out of there, and I'm grateful for that. We have a lot of initiatives in that plan, and all good, all to help the middle class, because I am one of the middle class. It's something that I think is something that the affordability crisis is real here in Vermont, and it's something we need to address because working class Vermonters have had enough. Enough of the taxes that have been raised, the fees that have been raised over the last 6 or 7 years to the tune of about $700 million, and they need a break. And I believe that I'm the only candidate that has recognized that and will live within our means, tighten our belts, and do what we can to focus on the economy and actually grow the economy so that we can have more opportunity in the future.
Billy, you get one more crack if you'd like it.
Yeah, I'm the most conservative of the bunch. You know, I'm the guy who digs his own potatoes. I've only accepted $20. If I get 10,000 votes, that's pretty good for $20. You know, you can't be middle class and support the 2%. It just does not work, and that is the problem here. It's not – we've inherited this problem in Vermont, and we've got to – be concerned about maybe exiting the way that old Ethan Allen did. For 14 years, we were our own country. For 14 years, we were happy. For 14 years, we made our own laws, and we did not like New York. We had militia. Every time they came across to survey our thing, we kicked their butts.
So let me ask you, are you going to ask Phil or Sue if they support secession? Is that where you're going here?
No, I don't. That no one supports secession except me and a few radicals that are all dead.
You're listening to a live gubernatorial debate with Bill Lee, Phil Scott, and Sue Minter. Coming up, more questions from Vermonters. This is VPR.
Tonight, we're hosting a live gubernatorial debate among Liberty Union's Bill Lee, Republican Phil Scott, and Democrat Sue Minter. I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm here with Bob Kinzel. And in this part of the debate, we're going to return to questions from the moderators and from the public. And we're really hoping to have time for a lightning round. So anything you can do, and Bob and I will try to do the same in keeping our questions and answers brief so we can get to more of these questions would be great. Pretty much all the candidates in this election, up and down the ballots, have said that improving Vermont's economy and employment landscape is really a top priority. But the question is how. We heard from a lot of Vermonters who want to find out from you on this issue. Allison would like to hear, how will the candidates attract corporations and the young employees who work for them so that Vermont gains in that crucial demographic rather than losing young professionals in droves? And Lori in Colchester wants to know, what would you do to stimulate higher-paying jobs in Vermont? Please be specific on that issue. Bill Lee, we'll start with you.
Cut our firewood differently. Cut it at 40 inches length first. Find a clear face, and I will buy it for $20, and I can make a baseball bat out of it. Then you can cut the rest of it, and you can make rolling pins. In other words, our arboreal forest is our biggest asset, and we're not using it properly. We need more artisans. We need more people that are thinking outside the box, you know, making spoons. Welsh people, they buy spoons for weddings. You can take a wooden spoon out of a piece of dead firewood in the hotel I'm staying at, Town and Country in Stowe, because I'm going to be at the Vermont Farm Bureau thing tomorrow, and the Mountaineers gave me the room for free because I went and gave a speech for them, where Jasper was at. And it all goes around in a circle. In other words, use what you have and don't bellyache. And that's the problem here. We're all looking for help from somewhere else. And the Northeast Kingdom's doing well because we have cheese, we have kimchi, we have pigs that lay on their back, and they eat apples, and they're happy.
So don't attract corporations, just work with what we have.
Exactly.
Phil Scott?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to be more consistent in government. We have to first live within our means, present budgets that don't grow faster than the economy, don't grow faster than wages, so that there isn't a constant threat of more taxes and creativity in terms of things like the service tax and carbon tax and so forth. That's what prevents a lot of corporations and companies, small businesses, from growing. Because they don't know what's coming next. When there was the talk of single payer for 4 or 5 years, there was always that threat of what that was going to mean for some of these businesses, whether it's going to mean a 15 or 16 or 17% payroll tax, who was going to pay for it, how much it was going to cost, and there was no answers to that. So that threat alone left a lot of developers, a lot of businesses sitting on their hands, not wanting to grow because they didn't know what it was, the unknown, the lack of consistency. So we need more consistent government. As well as housing. I think housing is a focus where I think most of us would agree affordable housing is something that we can do if we all focus on that as well.
So how would you do that? What would you do towards affordable housing?
Well, there's two ways of doing that. First of all, if you look at the incredible growth in the renewable energy field in terms of solar and so forth, has all been due to tax incentives, all because of tax credits. It's been lucrative for developers to grow this sector. So we just need to take a page out of the playbook and utilize that same concept for housing. And I think most of us would agree that we need more affordable housing for the working class. And that's where we miss the mark here in Vermont. So we need more help in terms of permitting, less mandates and less burdensome mandates on some of the permitting, and a helping hand in doing so, and some tax incentives to do so. And I have a plan in philscott.org for housing that incorporates some smaller housing as well for individual owners.
So, Sue Minter, just to recap again, the questions here from Allison, who wants to know how you will attract corporations and the young employees who work for them, and Lori in Colchester, who wants specifics on what you would do to stimulate higher-paying jobs in Vermont.
So my mission number one as governor will be to continue to grow our economy, create livable wage jobs, and I have two main strategies. Number one is about investing in our communities, like we did in Barrie, like we've had in St. Albans, where we built a public investment in infrastructure for Barrie, $19 million of public investment, water, wastewater, sewer, a new main street with a pedestrian orientation, partnering with that community, having the affordable housing. In 6 years, it's leveraged over $45 million of private investment. And that has created 350 new jobs, 24 new businesses. That's what I want to do in my first year. I'm going to choose three communities. These are not new taxes. These are, in fact, using the revenues that we have. But I'm also going to be driving innovation in what I think are the four key sectors of our economy. Advanced manufacturing, high tech, and the green economy, the farm, food, and forest economy, and the renewable energy and efficiency economy. These are the places where young people are coming and moving, and they are livable wage jobs. Today, we announced our press conference. We had innovative entrepreneurs who are having big jobs, livable wage jobs, growing quickly in these sectors. But let me tell you,
Tax incentives? I mean, what are you doing in those sectors to grow and to encourage job growth?
So what I will be doing in my first 90 days is setting up task forces of the leaders of these sectors, because it is actually about focusing on how we link workforce with businesses. Right now, I've been going around talking to businesses, Commonwealth Dairy in Brattleboro. They grew in 5 years where they had hoped to be in 10 years. They can't grow because they can't find qualified workers. I'm up at dealer.com. They've got 60 job openings, starting salary at $80,000. They can't grow because they can't find qualified workers. We need to make sure that our tech, VTC, our community colleges, and all of our institutions for higher learning are actually creating the curricula, the internships, the certifications, the apprenticeships to get more of our young people into livable wage jobs. We also need to continue to grow those sectors and support those sectors and those entrepreneurs which have the livable wage jobs. Renewable energy. I've been to four different renewable energy companies. We have gone from, with Sun uncommon, a workforce of four to a workforce of 100 plus. They're all young people, either young Vermonters who wanted to stay or young people who wanted to come to Vermont because of our green economy. That's how we can have livable wage jobs, vibrant communities where young people want to be, and make sure we're growing the workforce for the future.
Let's go back to the topic of higher education. Sally in Burlington asked the candidates, what's your opinion about the concept of tuition-free education at community colleges? Could it be financially possible? Sue Minter, you talked about this earlier this evening. You've proposed this idea. You want to pay for it by raising the bank franchise tax, but the banks say they can't afford to pay this new tax without passing those costs along to consumers. So in effect, they say you're asking all Vermonters to pay for this plan in higher banking fees. Why is that a fair approach?
So let's talk about Vermont Promise and what we're trying to accomplish. Look, I'm a mom. I have been engaged with our schools. I have been the carpool mom. I've been a soccer coach. And I have seen what happens with kids who manage to go beyond high school and into college and those who don't. I was talking to some young people in White River Junction talking about their peers who hadn't gone on and their struggles. We have a lost generation, and I am committed to getting more kids beyond high school. You know, in Vermont, we have the highest high school graduation rates in the country. We do a great job. But when it comes to continuing beyond, we're actually near the bottom of the country. And my goal is to, right now, 4 out of 10 kids in Vermont ending their education after high school. 2/3 of the jobs require it. More education training beyond high school. My goal is to get from 40% to 75% by 2025. And yes, we're going to ask the banks to partner. We are going to actually increase that franchise fee for the largest out-of-state banks, $750 million deposits. I say it's a win-win-win. It's a win for students and families. It's a win for our workforce and our economy.
Why is it fair, though, to ask all Vermonters to pay for this program with higher banking fees?
First of all, it's not all Vermonters. It's Vermonters, and it isn't going to necessarily add to new expansion of down to the middle class. Let's just think about this. Right now, banks are required by federal law through the Community Reinvestment Act to invest in communities. They do it in many ways. I want the banks to partner on this mission. This mission of getting more kids beyond high school so that we can break the cycle of poverty. And why is it in the banks' interests? You know, when someone has an associate's degree, they will earn on average $12,000 more per year. With a bachelor's degree, they will earn on average $32,000 more per year. That is economic prosperity, which absolutely will come back to support bank investments. But you know, right now, the bank franchise fee has been at about $10 million coming into our general fund from 2007. It has remained flat for the last 10 years. I don't think that Vermonters' property taxes have remained flat. I think that banks can pay their fair share, that students get a fair shake.
Billy, what do you think should be done to make higher education more affordable for students and their families?
Make it free at the top. They got to donate their service to the state of Vermont for 2 years. If they go outside of it, they got to pay it back. I don't know how you'll ever collect that, but I believe in working within your town and doing the work. And the funny thing is, there's no jobs out there except these high tech jobs that I just heard about that you can't fulfill them because our education system is flawed. We don't teach in the right direction. We don't find out what jobs are necessary and then teach backwards towards it. That's the problem. Our education system is flawed because we're teaching on a general level, and then we have all these specific jobs out there, which is really contrary to what I believe in. I believe in generalization, but it seems like our society is going in a way that I don't. You know, and I like the bank idea. Willie Sutton, they said, why do you rob banks? And he goes, isn't that where they keep the money? And, I like going after banks, especially when the guy from Wells Fargo gets $32 million severance pay after throwing credit cards down our throat. You know, and Wells Fargo, where do you think he came from? Wells, Vermont.
Phil Scott, you've talked about the need to attract more young people to the state. That's been a big theme for you, have more young people working and living in Vermont. Isn't making higher education more affordable a great way to keep more young people in the state and ensure that people in Vermont's future workforce have the skills they need for the jobs of tomorrow?
Well, I think we're looking at this a little bit backwards. I agree. We need more affordable education. But at the same time, we graduate 10,000 students every single year from our colleges and universities. We just don't keep them here because of the affordability issue that we face. They can't find affordable housing. They can't find an opportunity that pays what maybe some other areas of the country pay. And they do the math, and they're very mobile. So I believe that we should be creating an economy that works. We should address this crisis of affordability, build the economy so that there are more opportunities, more businesses, more development, so that we can keep some of those existing. It's fertile ground. You know, we have people, again, they came here for a reason. They stayed here for a reason in order to go to school here, so they have an affection for Vermont. We just have to provide an opportunity and housing for them and an affordable living for them as well so that they will stay.
If you're elected governor, though, specifically, will you do anything to make higher education more affordable?
I have a daughter that is paying off a school loan as we speak. She works at Chili's in Providence, Rhode Island, nights to do so. And I'm very familiar with that. But I also know how easy the Sallie Mae's of the world made it for her to obtain the loan. But an 8 or 9% interest rate is something that's really a barrier for her and is really almost criminal in nature. I believe that we should be doing whatever we can. I've spoken to the treasurer about this over the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm hopeful that we can do something to provide for lower interest rates loans for our students. And I know Congressman Welch is working on the federal level. 8 or 9% isn't affordable, and we could create, an incentive for many to stay in Vermont by creating that affordable payment plan.
You're listening to the gubernatorial debate here on VPR. We're hearing from Phil Scott, Bill Lee, and Sue Minter. When the legislature reconvenes in January, it's going to be tasked with finding $1.3 billion for lake and waterway cleanup over 20 years. That's about $68 million a year. There are at least 60 recommendations to the treasurer's office for how to raise this money, from a gas tax to a per-parcel landowner fee, new taxes on water-related recreation equipment like boats, maybe ski equipment, even a toll on the Lake Champlain Bridge is on the table. What revenue sources do you support for lake cleanup, and which ones would you take off the table as this state looks for this really hefty chunk of money? Sue Minter?
So last March, I put forward a clean water action plan. I know that it isn't just Lake Champlain that we need to be dealing with, the surface waters of the state, but also our drinking water. I've been to Bennington and North Bennington many times since the discovery of toxic contamination, PFOA, in over 200 families' well water. I think that we need to really tackle this challenge, and I go back to infrastructure. My proposal is to focus on clean water bonds. Why? Because we have a very aging infrastructure throughout this state. We can actually help municipalities increase their bonding capacity with state support of bonding capacity to address what I think is so critical, clean drinking water. Better stormwater management, better wastewater management. But we will also be looking at all of the ways in which stormwater runoff is contributing to Lake Champlain pollution. That's why we'll be working with our agricultural sector, even our transportation, our rural roads. We have to be all in on this critical issue, and that's what I plan to lead on.
Phil Scott, where would you find this $1.3 billion?
Well, we're all in this together, and I think protection of our water is essential, especially with climate change. I think that will be somewhat of a draw for many throughout the country to come to Vermont if we can make sure that we protect that valuable resource to us. And it shouldn't be on the backs of just farmers. I think, again, we're all in this together. Farming is a part of our tradition and culture and a big part of our economy as well. I believe that we should look, of course, for with leveraging federal funds, but also there's a utility line, electrical line that's going through Lake Champlain being contemplated. And if that goes through, there should be a revenue source there that I think should go directly to the cleanup. It's going through Lake Champlain, and I think that that's one area that we could look for to help fund that.
Billy?
I've been working with Robert Kennedy for a long time. I work with a group out of Canada, which is for clean water. We took the PCBs out of the Hudson River. You know, we should have been thinking about this a long time ago. I look at the way our large farms contribute to the runoff, especially in the Missisquoi Basin. We have all these blooms. We're going to have definitely high and low water for the next probably 100 years. How are we going to deal with that? You know, it's who created the problem in the first place? My theory is groups like Archer Daniel Midland, Monsanto. Monsanto's going to merge with Bayer. They're going to be a multi-trillion-dollar company. They're the ones that should be responsible for cleaning everything up. Go to where the money is. That's what they used to say in Deep Throat. Follow the money. Follow the money that created the problem and get it back from them.
Let's go to a brief lightning round in the time that we have left. This is, again, VPR's Governor's Debate. And we've got a few more minutes here, and we're going to get to as many of these as we can. You'll have 15 to 30 seconds to answer each question. I know that's really tough. Rick in Stowe asks, where would you seek help if you had an addiction or struggled with depression? Is privacy a concern for you? Phil Scott.
I think privacy is a concern for all of us, and the stigma attached to mental health issues is real. We should be treating mental health issues just as we do any other health issue. It should be stigmatized, and I believe that we should be seeking help through our emergency departments, but also our designated agencies. I think they do a great job in the community I live in. Washington County Mental Health does a great job with that, and we need to support them.
Bill Lee, where would you seek help?
Pharmaceutical companies. They're the ones that cause the problems. They're the ones that push it down our throat. They're the ones that cause all the anxiety, you know, and tax the, like I said, my sin tax on all the bad stuff that you create that creates a bad body. I've never seen a runner with a lot of depression. They seem to be pretty high to me.
Sue Minter?
Well, I agree with Phil. We have to have mental health parity, and we need greater access, and it is a critically important issue. I have to say it's one of the most surprising issues as I've been running, the degree to which our opiate epidemic is affecting us. And as a governor, I want to appoint an opiate crisis manager in the governor's office, as I was the crisis manager after Irene, thinking 24/7 about this challenge, really trying to manage it in a multi-sector way with a task force. This is what we need to be doing, and this is a huge, huge problem that's overwhelming us in many ways.
This is from a listener named Deb. When you refer to the middle class, exactly what household income are you referring to? Sue Minter, what's middle class?
So, you know, the median income for, I think, a family of four is $55,000. And I guess I think the median income is a good beginning point. I would expand that up probably to $90,000. But that would be my vision of the middle class.
Phil Scott?
Yeah, it's hard to identify, but I would agree with Sue, somewhere around under 100,000. But I was in Rutland yesterday, and we had a sine wave, and somebody pulled up, and both the husband and wife worked at GE. They're making $60,000 a piece, and they say they're not just getting by. And it's just amazing with the families. I think it's all due to the high cost of living in Vermont, this crisis of affordability. We just keep imposing more taxes and fees and just putting more burden on these working families. So I think that that's something that we have to address.
Billy?
We buy too much stuff. That's our problem. Mini storage. We got too much junk, and that's the problem. I'll tell you, the average income of the planet, the rich should be making $110,000 and the poor should be making $107,000. That is what you take if you took a world view of economics. And that's because the difference between the 2% and the bottom is so big in our country in relationship to other countries.
On vaccines, Kathleen in Grafton says, what are your positions on childhood immunizations? Billy.
It's up to the parents, if they want to immunize, they should. It shouldn't be forced upon them. It's parental choice, and that's the way it is. But it tends to work. I've got more shots in me, and I'm pretty healthy.
Sue Minter?
Well, I support the important role that vaccines play in reducing major diseases, in fact, eliminating some, and certainly want to continue to require vaccination unless people have a religious exemption.
Phil Scott.
Yeah, I'm a supporter of vaccines, and in fact, I took a lot of heat for that a couple of years ago publicly when I supported that. I know that there are many people that support vaccine choice, but I think providing that opportunity for disease and so forth is something that's too high at risk.
A listener named Ed submitted this question. What's your position on Vermont taxing online sales by all firms, either in Vermont or not? Phil Scott?
I think we should do something on a national federal level to make sure that we're getting our share. I feel bad for the bricks and mortar businesses that have to compete against the Amazons of the world. And I think that there's something that should be done on a federal level.
Billy?
Yeah, you're right. I bought my first thing on Amazon, and it was a knee brace, and it was from West Germany. So there I go. I'm the worst. I bought a knee brace out of West Germany, and it cost less than what you can get. In Canada, it was $300, and on Amazon, it was $79. So you're right. I'm guilty. I should have paid tax on that. I don't know if I did, but it's the first time I ever bought anything online and probably the last.
Sue Minter?
Well, this is a huge problem for our Main Street businesses, our small local entrepreneurs. I want to support local, buying local. You know, I've worked for 10 years on the downtown revitalization effort in our Waterbury downtown, and it's actually been the way that we've been keeping people shopping locally, by helping support the entrepreneurs in the community, by bringing people there with activities, by integrating culture and art into what is our downtown, to make sure we have a wonderful synergy of restaurants, artists, and small businesses. And really, that is the best way that we can keep our local businesses strong. It's actually helped promote our and grow our local communities and businesses in Waterbury.
On Tuesday, on Election Day, Sue Minter, will you be voting for yourself?
Yes, I will.
Phil Scott, will you be voting for yourself?
Yes.
Bill Lee, will you be voting for yourself?
Still up in the air.
Who do you think you'll vote for? If not yourself, who will you be voting for?
I always vote for myself. Every time I look in the mirror, I see a hero.
It's time now for our last question of the debate. You have a minute to answer. How will Vermonters' lives be better in 2 years if you're elected governor? Billy?
We'll all be wearing lederhosen. You know, we're going to be just like Bavaria. We're going to have everybody's going to go up to Sean Hill's place in Hillstead. You know, there'll be a super highway built just to his place because of the great beer, the great cheese, the artisans, everything. I see nothing but great things, because the worse the United States gets, the better we get. So I have no fear. I have no fear. I own a lot of guns, and that's probably why I have no fear. Thank you.
Sue Minter?
Well, it's been a pleasure, and it's been really a focus for me to present my plans on how I want to create livable wage jobs, create vibrant communities. I'm the only candidate here who has actually managed a $600 million budget during tough economic times and been fiscally responsible at dealing with that, managing a 13-person workforce. I am really dedicated to making sure we have economic opportunity for the future with 2 years tuition-free community college, so that we get more kids qualified for livable wage jobs, so that we make the workforce for the future. I will be a candidate who will always has and always will support a woman's right to choose. I will be a candidate that stands up to the gun lobby and pushes forward with common sense background checks for all guns. And, you know, I really am looking forward to being the next governor of this state. I'm someone who brings people together, gets things done. I believe in Vermont. I'm asking for your vote. And I believe we can build a brighter future together.
Phil Scott.
Well, I am the candidate that has been able to bring people together. I've made my whole political life on consensus building, facilitating, reaching across the aisle, and I'll continue to do so. And I think that's part of the answer. Reinstilling the faith and trust has been lost in state government and nationally as well. And you do that by acting appropriately. I'm the candidate that has had a lot of sleepless nights, building a business, raising a family here in Vermont, worrying about things like payroll, how are you going to make your payroll, how are you going to, where's the next job coming from, how do you protect your employees and their families. And it is something that really instills a sense in your foundation about what needs to be done. And it's about economic growth. It's the only way we're going to work our way out of this. It's not about raising taxes and fees. It's about living within your means and trying to provide opportunity for Vermonters in a much different way. And I believe I can build a climate that's conducive to growth. And I think that's the answer for Vermont.
Well, that concludes VPR's gubernatorial debate. I really want to thank our candidates tonight, Democrat Sue Minter, Republican Phil Scott, and Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee. Thanks very much to all three of you for participating.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Election Day is next Tuesday, November 8th. Check out VPR's Time to Vote guide at vpr.net. And then on Tuesday night, stay with VPR on air and online for live updates from all the statewide races and ballots items, and also for the latest results from that intensely watched presidential race. That's election night on VPR and VPR.net.
VPR's election debates are produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Our director is Mary Williams, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Chris Albertine mixed tonight's broadcast, and special thanks to Frank Alwine for engineering VPR's entire debate series this election season. And thanks to all of you, our listeners, for listening.